Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Or Horvitz, former Lieutenant Colonel in Israel's Defense Intelligence, is a strategic leader with over 17 years of experience at the intersection of U.S. foreign policy, U.S.-Israel relations, intelligence and security. He currently serves as the head of the American program at the Jewish People Policy Institute. And I am absolutely delighted to have him as my guest now to talk about exactly what is going on with regards to the Iran-U.S. deal and what it means for Israel. Lieutenant Colonel, welcome and thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you very much. Shabbat Shalom. It's great to be back with you.
Likewise. Though the last time we spoke, it was just at the beginning of the, war. And I don't think anybody kind of can have guessed that it would end up here and now with America's deal with Iran. And I just want to hear your thoughts as to how we got here.
So I think what we've seen is that the American interest became very evident in trying to do everything within President Trump's power to prevent the ongoing or the continuation of war. And that's why, because of economy, because of the World Cup, and because there are midterm election, I think that the U.S. interest became to somewhat quite distinct from the Israel interest, which is to keep pushing forward, because the main goal, the main Israeli point of view, is focusing on two things. First is the nuclear threat, and the second one is trying to do anything in our power in order to accelerate the instability of this regime. So I think we saw this distinction between the U.S. interest and the Israel interest, and that's why we've seen this agreement being signed without the consent of Israel. Now, of course, we are in a very delicate situation because it is our greatest ally, so we need to move very cautiously in how to deal with the strategy moving forward.
Is there a feeling of disbelief that you're in the situation that you are in now? Could anybody have predicted it?
Well, yes, I think we knew in advance, or at least many people knew in advance, that Israel interests regarding Iran are not 100% aligned with that of the U.S. We had mutual interest in the beginning of March trying to do to degrade Iranian military capabilities. I think we anticipated the fact that Iran will use Hormuz and will fire basically everywhere and anywhere in the Gulf and including Israel territory, because it is, or it was, a war for its life or for its very existence. It is becoming more evident that we overplayed or at least overestimate our ability to topple this regime from outside, and we overestimate the ability of the Kurdish, which are not Iranian, which is very interesting. They are not the vast majority. We were overestimate their ability to topple this regime. So there is no doubt that we made mistakes throughout the way, and I think it led to these consequences that we are seeing now.
Before we go into the consequences, do you think there was the uprising in Iran, and America kept saying, don't worry, go for it, we'll support you, but there was a hang of a gap between American action after the uprising. And from what I understand, there are 30,000 to 40,000 people that were killed during that uprising, right? Which I suppose, had the action taken place earlier, had the timing been better, do you think you'd still be in this position?
Well, that's a very hard question to answer. And I think that only historians will know the answer for that, and perhaps only years from now. But we do know this. At least up until this war, the Iranian regime became more unstable than ever. And the fact that hundreds of thousands of people marched towards the street in January, many of them part of the Persian majority, was a sign of its crumbling. So I do think, and I still believe, that it is a matter of time and not a matter of if. But the main question is where we are now. In the Soviet Union analogy, whether we are in 81, 83, 89, or 91. So we don't know exactly when this time will come, but I genuinely believe that it will come, because I think that this regime does not have concrete thorough answers to the Iranian needs. So in the end, it is not viable, and I don't think it will survive. But I think we need to take into account that this process might take years. And throughout those years, there is a major threat being posed on Israel, especially the nuclear issue and the ballistic missile issue.
So in a way, many are saying that the threat against Israel is now greater than it has been because of the conditions to the ceasefire. Is that correct?
I don't think that I have a binary answer to that. On the one hand, we did degrade Iran nuclear robust, modern, advanced nuclear system that was built upon hundreds of scientists, hundreds of facilities, etc. This robust system, I think, went back years. But Iran still have the most crucial part in order to acquire a nuclear bomb, and that is the enriched uranium for 60%, which is still in Iran, approximately half a ton. So as long as they'll have this enriched uranium, they might build a secret bomb in the desert using this stockpile. So I'm not sure that the answer for this is whether we moved forward and tried to tackle this threat or moved backward. Regarding the ballistic missile threat, we were able to degrade many of the industrial base that is crucial to building those ballistic missiles, and we did crash some of these ballistic missiles. But we know that Iran motivation, both on the ballistic missile end and on the nuclear end, will be much higher now than it was on February. So I don't know who will win in this clock race that we are now seeing. Regarding the stability of this regime, I think that once you are giving billions of dollars, and it might be hundreds of billions of dollars, I believe that it will be a life injection for this regime, and it might prolong the process in which it will be crumbled. And another problem that we are facing is that when Iran have money, it sends the money to its proxy. It is more important for them than to give their people a better way of living. So I think that this is another cause for alarm for Israel, that Hezbollah, which is basically isolated in Lebanon and outside of Lebanon, will get a crucial amount of money that will allow him to keep sustaining himself in the Lebanese society and arena.
Sure. You've raised a number of difficulties. Let's start with Lebanon and Hezbollah, because this is one of the sticking points also for President Trump. To what extent can Israel move in Lebanon, because it's already there, and with the current agreement? And what are Israel's options?
So unfortunately, we have much more limitations now than we had in February. And we just heard last night the horrible news of four fallen soldiers. One of them, Dor, was the battalion commander and a friend of mine. So yeah, this is the price that Israelis have to pay to protect their homeland. But I think that we have a problem in Lebanon. We have a problem because we need this freedom of movement throughout South Lebanon, but also throughout the entire part of Lebanon in order to fight Hezbollah military installation, because the Lebanese army currently does not engage in demilitarization of Hezbollah. So there is no other alternative than to let Israel do it, especially when Hezbollah is very, very present north of the Litani River, which is basically throughout the other region of Lebanon. So that is a problem. But we still have an historic opportunity in Lebanon. Hezbollah, as I've mentioned, is isolated. He doesn't have Syria anymore. Syria used to be governed by a friendly regime, Assad regime. Now Ahmed al-Shara is loathing Hezbollah. So we have an opportunity to basically close the lifeline that used to give Hezbollah funds and ammunition throughout the years. We also have allies in Lebanon that we can work with in order to basically keep isolating Hezbollah. And along with the kinetic measure, and given the fact that the U.S. really don't care about Lebanon, Lebanon is a minor issue in the big game against Iran. So I think we have room to try to find the right path using kinetic and unkinetic ways in order to keep pushing the aim of demilitarize Hezbollah, and hopefully also reach a peace agreement with the state of Lebanon. And I still believe, with even given all the pessimism, that it is for the first time possible.
Trump made comments about Israel's attacks on Lebanon and destroying Lebanon, and saying it was, you know, it used to be one of the most beautiful countries in the Middle East. To what extent are Trump's comments taken very seriously in Israel, or kind of seen as politicking?
So they are taken very seriously, and there is even, I think, many Israelis used to really love Trump. Trump used to say that if he would have run to the prime minister office in Israel, he would have won. And that is true. I think it is the only country that vastly supports President Trump outside the U.S. And I think it says a lot. And right now, there is some sort of disappointment with Israelis. There is one side of, let's say 50% of the Israelis still think that, well, we can handle ourselves. We are independent. We don't need President Trump. We don't need the US. We did stuff in the past that were by ourselves, and we'll keep doing so. But I think that the other half, and I'm part of this half, understand that this alliance is indispensable. And then, even though we have sometimes conflict of interest, it is extremely important that we keep this alliance, not just with President Trump or with this Trump administration, but also with the US as a whole. And regarding the first comment that you've made regarding the remarks about Lebanon, the only reason that Lebanon is in such a despair mode is the fact that Iran basically grasped Lebanon as a hostage. And that is the reason why we are in this situation in the first place. And without Hezbollah, I genuinely believe that Lebanon can be prosperous. And unfortunately, Lebanon is being taken hostage by Iran. And these are the horrible consequences that we are seeing now.
Your expertise is also Hezbollah. Post October the 7th, Israel managed to really do huge damage to Hezbollah. The fact that you're there is indicative of the fact that you think you can still do more. Will the Trump deal affect Israel carrying on fighting Hezbollah?
Yes, because of two reasons. First, because when you have billions of dollars being injected to Hezbollah, it will be much harder to tackle Hezbollah. So that is the first problem. Again, even though I think that we can work hard in order to prevent this money from coming to Hezbollah, but this is the first challenge. The other challenge is the fact that if we are limited to operating in Lebanon, in South Lebanon, but throughout the country, we have a genuine problem of handling with the military facilities that are stationed throughout the country. Just to give you an example, many parts of the leadership of the drone buildup, other capabilities are being stationed in the Dahiya, which is the Shiite quarter of Beirut. Many Hezbollah installations are in the Bukaa Valley, which is in the northeast. So if you are not operating there, it will be extremely easy for Hezbollah to just push forward, push northward, all of his military installation. And by that, you are not reaching the objective of demilitarized Hezbollah. And again, we did not desire this aim. It was preferable that the Lebanese army would have done so, but it is not doing though. He's not doing so. So the only alternative or the only potential force that is able to do so is the IDF. So as the least favorable, least worst option, this is what we have to do. And if we won't work north of the Litani River, we will basically never be able to demilitarize Hezbollah. That is the sad truth.
So it's boots on the ground, and as you mentioned earlier, the cost, the human cost to that is really, really great. When I think of Hezbollah, one can't help be reminded of the Beeper, I don't know, operation, which is indicative also of Israel's intelligence in that area, perhaps that it was lacking in Gaza. To what extent can we expect to see more things like that?
Well, I do hope that we will use our Jewish genius and also perhaps Israeli innovative and boldness in order to build more operation like this. It is extremely crucial in order to make Hezbollah lose its grasp over the Lebanese society. So I do think that it's extremely important, but the most important thing in Lebanon for Israel is to have a strategy. We need to have a coherent strategy that is combining both military and other means in order to achieve our goals. And if we won't have strategy, and unfortunately it is becoming increasingly evident that we don't have strategy, we will still see the same situation during the next season. That is a problem. But we have to acknowledge that Hezbollah was dramatically weakened since October 7. That is very, very important. Hezbollah used to have the capability, in his perspective, and not just in his perspective, to basically annihilate Israel with 150,000 rockets and missiles. I remind everyone that no superpower have these sorts of capabilities. With 6,000 troops stationed approximately 5 kilometers to the bo for the border, able to penetrate Israel territory and do exactly what happened in October 7, only in a much bolder and in much more efficiency. So I think Hezbollah now is much more reduced terror organization. He's still able to inflict damage on Israel. He's still able to basically make the lives of our people in the northern area unsustainable. But I think that the threat that is posed by Hezbollah is much lower than it used to be prior to October 7, and that is very important to note.
Lieutenant Colonel, Iran-US-Israel relations going forward, what can we expect?
Well, first, I think that now it will be very interesting to see whether Iran will obey by the agreement. In the end, Iran has a perception of victory, and it doesn't want to compromise. And I'm not sure that they have a coherent leadership that is able to take decisions. Just to give you an example, I think yesterday, Mujtaba Khamenei, the supreme leader, mentioned that he is against the agreement, which is very interesting. So I think that I'm not sure that as you push forward, you'll still see those two countries, the US and Iran, keep having an agreement that is viable, that is feasible. So it will be very interesting to see what will be next. Israel will have to stick to its red lines. The red lines are is first, not allow Iran to have nuclear weapon, which is find a way for the stockpile of enriched uranium to getting out of the country or to be diluted. One of these two alternatives have to happen, whether through agreement or whether through other means. And the second thing is that Israel needs a new strategy that will be able to accelerate the rate in which this regime is crumbling. We have many partners for that in the Gulf states. We should work with the region, and we should work with American support, but not a primarily American support, but a secondary American support in order to do so. And I think we have plenty of room to navigate through these challenging times, and I think we still be able to achieve those two objectives if we will be bold, if we will have a strategy, and if we will work with our many partners across the region in order to achieve these goals. And again, I believe it is possible.
When you talk about a strategy, you spoke about a strategy also in Hezbollah. Where does that strategy come from? Who decides it and how is it implemented?
Hezbollah strategy?
No, so Israel's strategy.
Well, at first, I think prior to March, we basically were able to work everywhere we want in Lebanon. In November, we targeted the chief of staff of Hezbollah in the Dahiya. There was no retaliation whatsoever from Lebanon nor from Iran. So I think now we need to widen our ability to operate throughout Lebanon with an agreement with the US. We need to work hard. I think it's possible to broaden our operations there. But we also need to focus on two things, the money. And the money goes through Syria and Beirut airports, the two most important gateways for the money to be entered to Hezbollah. And the second thing is try to reduce Iranian influence. We need to fight against any military Iranian who is stationed in Lebanon, fight against any Iranian influence in Lebanon, but also try to strengthen the opposition for Hezbollah, both outside the Shiite sector, but also within the Shiite sector. And I think that for the first time it's possible because you'll see that many, many people who are not Shiites support demilitarization of Hezbollah, and that Hezbollah also losing gradually but steadily its grip over the Shiite population. So I think that if we work hard with the Lebanese society, we might achieve a goal in which Hezbollah, he might not be defeated militarily, but he will just be weakened. Because if he won't have the money, and if he won't have the Iranian, and if he won't have the support of the Lebanese society, I think it will be extremely hard for him to operate within Lebanon.
Sure, so much to take in. Thank you so much for joining me. And you've given us, well, certainly given me a lot of hope. And I look forward to our next chat. And I'm sure that when it is, we won't be able to have actually believed what has taken place since then because things in the Middle East are so unpredictable that one never knows really where this is going to end. We know how it's going to end. We just don't exactly know when exactly it's going
If
to
you
end.
are, just a last remark, if you are an Israeli and if you are a Jewish, you have to be optimistic. And I generally believe in our ability to overcome challenges and to come out stronger than we were. I generally believe that.
Thank you so much for joining me. That was former Lieutenant Colonel in Israel's Defense Intelligence, Or Hurwitz, and he's an expert on Israel, Iran, and U.S. relations.